Very good. Couple of housekeeping items before we get started. First of all, we're almost up to the Super Bowl. We'll have a little tiny bit on the Super Bowl indicator in next week's weekly, just because it's fun. Second of all, I do have to be off this call at 11, so we'll have a hard stop at 11. So let's get started right away. First of all, stocks are acting a little bit worse than we've expected in the first quarter. With up opens and down closes, we are sticking with our forecast of a correction in the first half. We've been looking for the second quarter, and you know we're approaching benchmarks, though, now much below 198 on the spider would suggest that we could see a good bit more corrective action. We are seeing the kind of volatility and trading range behavior we were looking for, but you know, we just have to see how that does. The daily stochastic is almost down enough to turn up and look pretty decent. You know, let's see how we do here. We've talked to a number of subscribers that are sitting on cash positions. We have no need to be fully invested here. We've been recommending between 10 and 20% cash for a while, and we think that's still the correct place to be. One of the things that is a little bit disquieting, I want everyone on the call to just sort of think back. The reaction to earnings like Apple's yesterday, which were just phenomenal, 6-7 months ago, if we had those kind of earnings, this market would have probably taken off to the upside instead of being down 195 points on the Dow. And we're seeing, for example, Facebook with great earnings and the S&P is down a little bit. In other words, the market's not reacting to great earnings on some of these companies. Remember that the market is a discounting mechanism. One of the reasons we're up where we were is that the market has been discounting a good economy, which we're seeing, and it's now possible that the market is discounting a little bit slower an economy going forward because of the international stuff, and we'll talk about the international stuff in a bit. Second thing, bond market. TLT is still an uptrend. The problem with that uptrend is we can drop all the way back to 122 and still be in an uptrend. That's why we've been telling our traders to consider sale of TLT at 134, which is a little bit below where we are now. We're still happy with that as a decision. But for investors, obviously, the trend on TLT is up. This is somewhat of a solitary walk. Treasuries up the most. Other bond ETFs or interest rate-sensitive ETFs are lagging. A graphic example is PFF preferreds. PFF, if you look at the chart, is double-topping with the 2/12/14 December of 2014, last December's highs. If TLT were performing in line with that, it would be trading from between 126 and 128. Not at 136. So you are definitely seeing a solitary walk. That is a concern, you know, but, you know, we've proposed some alternatives. We've written about those. We're presenting on those, and we would be segueing into those and also looking at some of the bond funds out there. As an additional note, hopefully everyone now knows that to see adjusted for splits and big distributions charts, you should go to stockcharts.com. For most advisors, we have Reuters data feeds. I went through four Reuters guys at Merrill Lynch, all of them left screaming because they never did do any of those chart conversions correctly, and that did cause some problems. You know, so CWB, DXJ, all these had big distributions. If you see a big gap on the chart that doesn't make sense with anything you've read about the markets, obviously you want to go and take a look further, call your ETF desk or look on the web to see if there's been a big distribution. Let's talk a little bit about the commodities markets here. Gold is pulling back more towards 120, which is we talked about in the weekly. Part of having a year of different or excessive volatility means a lot of false breakouts and breakdowns, and sort of choppy trends, and we think that's what's going on here. If you look at GLD, the stochastic has turned over and given the sell signal on the daily charts. The weekly charts are still fine. We're right up in that resistance area of 124 on GLD. There's a gap in the 120 area. We still think the GLD could fill that gap and be trading particularly well between 120 and 121. We want to hold that for the long term, but realize the ride could be bumpy on that. Now, let's talk about oil, because oil is extremely interesting here. Once again, USO is dropping into the end of the month because of the front month contract roll. And we have mentioned to a number of people that we are looking for the lowest monthly close in oil for this month. Now, I want to try to define that and be a little bit clear on how to play that. What we are saying is that the close on Friday, the end of January, last trading day of January, will be the lowest monthly close, i.e. the close at the end of February will be higher. That does not preclude lower prices. And in fact, if this is going to work the way we think it is, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday should actually be down in oil. Okay. In other words, we will open the next month down and trend down a bit, and then have a higher monthly close. So the way to really look at this, if you want to play oil or oil stocks, is after Friday's close, assuming we do open down Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday and trade down a little bit, if we come back above that January closing price, that would be a buy point where we could try to execute some oil futures if you're commodities traders, or USO or DBO if you're an oil trader. We are adding some, or looking at trading for people, some of the XLE stuff, and we would be very heartened to see that action in oil happen. If anyone has any questions, please send those to me. I will write more about that this week if we need to in the weekly. But essentially, a low monthly close does not preclude volatility around that close. That does not mean we're going to have the lowest price of oil that we're ever going to see in this bear market in oil on Friday. It just means that the monthly close will put us in position where the monthly Fred's price oscillator is right around minus 20. We should rally from there. The only two times we have been down here before, we've been a little bit below that minus 20 in 2008, 2009, but in 86, which we think is more similar to this period, in 1986, we actually did bottom this way, rally and make the lower, closing low in price with higher momentum we've talked about. Want to talk a little bit here about international. We definitely prefer emerging markets versus developed markets here on a technical basis. I want to talk a little bit about the significance of the Greek elections as we see them, just because it's interesting, and there's some things we're not seeing in the press. But I've seen in some other places. First of all, if Greece manages to renegotiate its debt as they are trying to do, we could see a cascade of demands to renegotiate debt on the part of Spain and Italy and Portugal. And that would be, I think, very difficult for the euro and put the euro and the eurozone in a very difficult phase for a while. So that's one of the dangers, and we don't really see that being reported a lot. The second thing is a little bit more complicated, but is interesting nonetheless, and that is pretty much every country now has got an anti-Eurozone movement or political party in it. Certainly France does. That's very prominent. Spain, Portugal, and even Germany have that now. And if one of those parties has won, and they succeed in getting their demands for debt renegotiation accepted, that will embolden people to vote for those other parties. In other words, we could see a lot more stress on the Eurozone than I think is being reported in the next 6 or 7 months. Who knows if it's going to stay Eurozone or not? I think it is. But the point is, in 2011, when we had the correction based on Eurozone stress, it was heightened stress and fear that the Eurozone was going to break up. We could see that again. The other interesting thing, and this is sort of perhaps an extrapolation on my part, but we are seeing in some of the anti-Muslim sentiment after these terrible events in France, we're seeing restrictions on movement among people that may be of Muslim or other religious persuasions. We're seeing restriction of movement between the Eurozone country for those guys. That may actually also be a restriction of labor, since many of the immigrants that are the ones that really move around are of these other religions or persuasions. In other words, you may be seeing barriers to movement of labor starting, whether they're mentioned as barriers to movement or whether they're barriers for other reason. And that also will put stress on the Eurozone, because free movement of labor and capital among the Eurozone is one of the reasons they have it. And so any sort of barriers, let's think for a minute in the United States, if we were, I mean, it's inconceivable in this country that we would say, okay, somebody's a certain religion, they can't move from state to state now. But there's starting to be some restrictions in the Eurozone on that, and laws being proposed and such. And that could also, again, put stress on the Eurozone as far as that goes. So we think that the Eurozone is probably going to be under stress more than people think. And emerging markets, actually, on a technical basis, if you look at EEM, it's actually trading pretty decently. So we would not mind being in emerging markets if we have to have an international sleeve. With that, I think I made all the comments I'm going to make. I'm going to open the call to Jeff Garbaz for a minute. So, Jeff?
Hey, Fred, how are you?
Fine, Jeff. How are you?
Doing pretty good. Hey, so let's start with breath. It seems like so far this year breath is really struggling. Are you more concerned by how the breath has started off the year? What's your thinking there?
Yes. Jeff's point that breath indicators are getting worse, not better, is correct. The market has been narrowing for some time. We can see that in indicators like the McClellan Oscillator. We can see that in indexes like the New York Composite and Russell, which are not bad chart patterns, but have definitely been lagging, and the breadth is starting to spill over into some of the bigger caps. So that's another thing that supports the potential for a bad first or second quarter of the year. And it's, you know, every technical indicator that's coming in seems to be going that way and supporting that. So the evidence is building.
Okay. So my next question, let's go over to New York Stock Exchange Composite Index, NYA. If we look at from the October low, and we look at all the lows that have been made, we hit a low in December, we hit a low like January 6th, we hit another low January 14th, and now we're kind of hitting another low. We seem to be making higher lows. That being said, since the September high, we're also making lower highs. So technically, what do we call that when we're in that type of formation over multiple months where we're making lower highs and higher lows? That kind of comes together. Is that can you kind of run through that? Is that like basically a pennant formation?
Sure. Well, it's a pennant formation or a wedge, but it's a pennant formation. And then the question is, obviously, which way do you move out of that pennant? What it's suggesting is we have the potential to have a big move coming, and whichever way we move out of this pennant is probably going to be the way it ultimately goes. But in this case, because of some of the stuff I have on my volatility indicator, one of the things we're going to have to watch out for is a false move out of the pennant back into the pennant, and then it's either going to go the other direction or go in the same direction again. In other words, this could be very choppy when we move out. My real concern here, though, is what Jeff is alluding to, which is the broader the index, the worse the chart in some respects. And we're seeing, again, the generals are leading Pickett's charge, and the troops are sort of staying home on this. But, yeah, that pennant is going to be interesting, and that will be one of the signals that we're going to have some movement.
So let's go back. Let's go down. Let's go from NYA over to the Russell. So the Russell doesn't look quite the same, because basically we actually did break out to a new high at the end of December, and now we've kind of made – we got into the beginning part of January when we pulled back and we came back up again, and then we came down and we came back up, and now we're going back down again. I mean, we basically made like pretty much almost the same exact high. So it's not like higher highs or lower highs. It's just kind of like, And it just seems like On the bottom end, it seems like the Russell is just bumping into 1150, and it's bouncing off of that number like almost miraculously. It just bounces off of 1150, boom. And so does that look a little better than NYA does?
It does. That's more of a wedge formation, which actually implies upside. We'll just have to see how that goes. But it does look a little better. And Jeff, the other index that I look at for small cap, IJR, which is larger cap, small cap, if you, in other words, it's a capitalization weighted small cap index. That looks a little bit better to the Russell. And it's actually, you know, one of the things we've been talking about is the potential for outperformance of small cap here. And that is a plus. We are seeing that. Now, one of the reasons for that could be, and of course, you never know the reasons for these things until long afterwards. But one of the nice things about the small cap indexes is they don't have a lot of exposure to Europe, those small caps. And it may be that the exposure to Europe in the NYA, because there are some European ADRs in there, is what's actually hurting that. Now, just don't know that, but that could very well be.
Okay. So can you pull up in on the S&P and do a daily chart that goes back to 2013 and throw in a 150 simple day moving average? I was listening to someone last night who had actually a really interesting observation, which is if we look at the S&P and we look at the 150-day moving average, you can see how in February of last year we bounced off of it, and then we actually broke it in October, but we did that kind of V-bottom. We came back above it, and then in December we bounced off of it, and we bounced off of it in the earlier January pullback after we had the quick up move, and now we've come down and we've tested it again. It's kind of interesting how the market is just like that 150-day simple. It's really sticking to that line. No one really kind of talks about that. If we break that 150 as opposed to like a 200 or some other moving average, would that be a real concern to you?
You know, not really. And I'll tell you why. It's sort of a convoluted answer. You know, you can always curve fit a moving average.
Absolutely.
You can go through the back data and find the best one. One of the things that Larry Williams and I, Larry Williams is a world-famous commodity trader, that Larry Williams and I did back in the 80s together as work, was pretty much conclusively proved that no moving average trading systems actually make any money. Okay. That was every moving average system that we tried and every combination of them failed ultimately. So I would tend to view that as just the 150 happens to be what's working really well right now based on the past data. That said, obviously we are holding that line and it is coming in through supports, and breaking that would probably be negative, but would I consider that to be the ultimate sell signal? And the answer to that is no, I probably wouldn't. But yeah. Jeff, what we're saying, though, is, again, you're seeing especially more action around the bottom end of moving averages, you know, on the lows rather than, say, moving averages of the highs, for example. You know, with the computer systems now, you can take the moving average of the highs, and are we hitting that a lot? And the answer is no. We're much below those and closer to the moving averages of closes or lows, which means the market is just trading a little tiny bit weaker, which is not a surprise to us.
Okay, so here's my next question for you, another data stat that I kind of track. So far this month, we've had 7 days where the market has either been finished the day up more than 1% or down more than 1%. We've had 4 days where we finished up more than 1%, 3 days where we finished down. In December, we had 5 days like that, you know, that were either up or down more than 1%. So in the last 2 months, we've had 12 days like that. And if we looked at from May through the end of September, we had a total of 5 days in that entire length of time. So should we be getting much more concerned because of this increase in intraday volatility, which I don't think a lot of people do a really good job of kind of measuring, and to me, like, that's why I like this statistic. Is this like a canary in a coal mine for us?
I think it is a canary in a coal mine for us. We're actually writing our Lucinto, my mathematical good friend, but my mathematical colleague that does a lot of the really heavy lifting for me on math and has since the 80s, and I are actually doing a piece on volatility and intraday volatility for our monthly research piece, and I want to just mention to people on the call that that's one that I would definitely want to read. But yeah, part of our forecast is for the year is that we're going to see increased volatility, which means movements up and down, as Jeff so eloquently pointed out. You know, the VIX tends to say that volatility is down moves, and that's not true. Volatility is also up moves. Yeah, you're seeing an increase in volatility. And realize, Jeff, if we go back to volatility the way it was in the 70s, for example, we should be seeing the average day move up and down over 1.6%. In other words, almost double what
people,
we're seeing
people,
now.
A lot of people will be going bald then. People will be pulling their hair out, that's for sure.
Well, and yeah, and Jeff, the reason we're doing this is many of our clients have clients, our clients are advisors, many of their clients are older people, and when they see the Dow swinging back and forth 180 points a day, they start, or 200 points a day, they start to freak out, when in fact that's normal if you look at percentages. That's actually why we're doing the piece, is we want to have something for our clients to go out and be able to say, here's numbers, here's what the percentages mean, relax and have a couple of margaritas and enjoy your retirement. But, yeah, we're seeing more volatility. That is very often a precursor to a decline, and that's another reason we're thinking of corrective behavior. The other two reasons, by the way, these low oil prices should mean that XLY is the top-performing sector, and it's hitting highs and this, that, and the other. And, in fact, XLY does not look great here. XLY looks worse than a lot of other sectors. That's consumer discretionary. So the low prices aren't helping the consumer, at least according to that. And you're starting to see some weakness in IYT and the Dow transports relative to the market. And again, you know, Jeff, the low oil prices should be helping all the transportation stocks. It is helping the airlines. But the transports is an economic indicator saying that we could see, you know, a little bit of economic trouble ahead, probably, I think, coming out of Europe. And, you know, again, we made a couple of European moves in our portfolio models, one of which was, frankly, we had the Swiss franc, which we've always used as a hedge. We sold that. But we also sold our Swiss market ETF, the EWL, and move that into IDLV. And the reason is these markets are starting to act a little bit strange in Europe relative to the currency movements in the dollar, and there's no way to really predict how that's going to keep going. But I'm also just very concerned that Europe could be a bigger problem than people are actually talking about. And the good news is we got out of those with nice profits, and we can always go back into those if we think we made a mistake later on. But right now, I think discretion is the better part of valor here, and I want to be somewhere where we're spreading that risk away from Europe and into some of the other developed countries as well.
Okay, great. So last question for you is a lot of companies have come public in the last year or two, and I want to look at three stocks, and I want to have you make a comment about what happens when they come back typically to their offered price, i.e. where they traded the first day that they went. And if they hold that, then that could be potentially a good thing, and we want to see that go above. So can you and these three stocks are all in different categories. The first one is FRSH, which is Papa Murphy's, which came public last year. That's the best situation. And then if you can look at ANET as well, that came public last year, and that's kind of like, you know, can coming back down, kind of basing, and it looks like potentially it could move up from here. And then clearly everyone this morning is going to be well aware of BABA, B-A-B-A, which is now coming back down to that offer price on, you know, what is being perceived as not good earnings. So can you talk about how
sure.
you trade those type of stocks and in those kind of three case studies? And that'll be my last question for you.
Sure. First of all, it's well known on Wall Street that if IPOs start trading below their offering price immediately after the offerings or within, say, a month after the offerings, that's an extremely large negative, and those are considered to be bad offerings, and all the smart people allegedly sell those. If you had done that with Facebook, for example, I think you were able to get out of Facebook in the low 20s. Okay, so obviously that doesn't necessarily work all the time. You have to look at the chart. You know, obviously you don't want to see these charts trading below their offering. The real concern, Jeff, that I've always had with the newer charts is, you know, stocks have personalities just like people, And when you get a difficult environment with some of these IPOs, you really don't know how they're going to trade, how those shareholders are going to react, especially if they don't have huge institutional sponsorship. So very often those new stocks, like Papa Murphy's, for example, could have larger declines than folks expect if the market starts to get bad, which is our forecast. So we tend to advise our clients to use a lot more risk management on that sort of name when there's problems. Now, in the case of Alibaba, we've been perhaps even wrong not being underweight technology right now, but we've certainly been cautioning on tech. And one of the reasons for that is when you look at the tech stocks in IYW, for example, that have been the big cap leaders, what you're seeing is bad action. In other words, when you look at Google, Google is not trading like a leading stock anymore. It's actually been making lower highs and lower lows. When you look at IBM, which has always been a leading stock in that index, it's just trading horribly badly. Apple is not even trading super well. It's trading okay, and the earnings were great, but it's really the only one that's trading like a leader stock, Apple and Facebook. And Facebook is down today on good earnings. So, you know, Baba especially concerns me, and I would be, if Alibaba gets down much below that offering price, I would be lightening my Alibaba position and looking for a greater than average correction in that name.
Hey, so you actually brought up a good point. So this is my last quickie for you. It's more just a philosophical question. With Apple's call yesterday, now it seems like everyone is jumping on board with the concept that Apple could get to a $1 trillion market cap in the next several years. I mean, they trotted out Carl Icahn on TV yesterday to explain that the multiple is only 10, blah, 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 you know, that they're going to keep taking over the world. And it just seems that no matter what company it is, once you get to that, you know, $500 billion market cap, the law of big numbers kicks in. And like, look, GE got to that level, failed. Exxon got to that level, failed. I think Cisco got pretty damn close to that level, failed. So do you think that, like, there is actually a possibility that the, you know, the law of large numbers could actually be violated as it relates to Apple when you look at the chart? Because you're a chartist, so that's the question I'm really asking.
Yeah. I actually think it could be. You know, Apple is still basically a very nice uptrending chart. And until it really starts going much below 96, it's a strong uptrend, 104 being the short-term support. So I think you have to stay with Apple and watch as it goes along with this, you know, with this uptrend, for whatever reason. The other thing I would say is, you know, you have to, you know, realize that the law of large numbers, when those stocks got to those points, GE and ExxonMobil did that many years ago when $500 billion was really $500 billion. In other words, we've got the effects of inflation and stuff like that and currency debasement to contend with as well. The real question is, where is Apple in ExxonMobil type dollars going back in time, not in today's dollar?
Okay, I'm done.
And I don't know the answer to that question.
Yep.
Sure. Anyone who's got questions, please feel free to hit *6 and unmute your telephonic units. Any questions at all?
Hey, Fred. It's CJ up in Williamsburg.
Hey, CJ. It was really good seeing you up golly yesterday, or day before yesterday, I guess it was.
Yeah, day before. Yeah. I appreciate you coming.
Yeah.
I was supposed to remind you about what you were talking about with the oil stocks and the American funds and looking at the, you know, what those funds are holding.
Thank you, CJ. That was a really great idea you made me think of, and I want to alert everyone to it. You know, one of the things that we learned on our call with when we had Tim on a couple of weeks ago, my client and friend in Canada, the petroleum engineer, was that these issues on the oil stocks are much more complicated than we're seeing on TV. And it hit me when I was talking to CJ in Richmond here that many of the large mutual funds like Fidelity and American Funds probably are employing geologists on their staff to evaluate these stocks. So one way to look for some of the oil stocks that may work well is to go in and look at the stock holdings of some of these large mutual funds, pick two or three or four that you know and that you'd like, and then find some common holdings in those. And assuming you find some common holdings, those are the individual stocks that you probably want to hold too. And the reason is I would guess that those PMs are talking to petroleum engineers and geologists. They're certainly not sharing the results of those conversations with us directly, but they are sharing the results with us in terms of the stocks that they own based on those conversations. So one way to look at the oil stock market may very well be right now in this period of turbulence, especially with drillers and things operating in the shale area, would be to see if there's any common holdings in that area and then buy those stocks for yourselves or for your clients. And thank you, CJ, for reminding me of that. That may actually turn out to be a really good way to make this work.
No problem. I'll take a look at it myself, too.
Hi, Fred. It's Joseph.
Hey, Joseph. How are you?
I am good. Thank you. I've got two to look at. One is Yahoo, which dropped today on Alibaba, but the longer-term picture. And the other is AMT.
Okay. Let me pull up weekly charts, Joseph, because I just realized I had my daily charts up for the call. You know, Yahoo has got support at 40, you know, really 42 to 40. I wouldn't be surprised to see it hit that lower end because the weekly stochastic is at 50. It's not concerning, but if I were going to try to add to my position, especially knowing you as I do, let's see if you can't get that around 40 and a half or so. And AMT was the other?
That's correct.
American Tower. You know, I have, in all of the telecoms, that is a stock I really like. It's been a great performer. 95 is fairly strong support, and you're close enough to that. Even though that stochastic is coming down a little bit, if you've got some money you want to put into that stock, Joseph, I would go ahead and do it. And just realize you might get 95, maybe hold a little bit out. But that is a great chart pattern. That's actually the best-looking chart pattern in telecom right now.
Great, thanks.
Sure. Other questions? Very good. Then what I will do is actually it's 10:48. If there are no more questions, we'll say going once, going twice. Very good. This gives me a little extra time. I want to wish everybody a very happy Super Bowl, and this will end the Fred Report technical market call for January 29th, 2015. As amazing as it sounds, we're through 1 month of the year already. Thank you. We'll talk next Thursday.